And welcome back to Channel 9 Live. This is Brian Keller here. Just a reminder that you can always tweet us your questions and your comments. We'd love to hear from you. I'm here in this half hour with Brandon Bray. Brandon is a friend of mine and a colleague over on the .NET Core platform team. And you're a group program manager over there.
I am.
So what does a group program manager on the .NET Core platform team do?
So the biggest part of the team that I work with is the Common Language Runtime.
Okay.
And then we also bring all the other parts of the .NET platform together from all the different groups at Microsoft that build it. And then lastly, we do setup and servicing for .NET Framework.
Okay, great. And you've been doing this .NET gig for a long, long time, right? You've been at Microsoft for 11 years, and you said you were an intern before that, right?
I was. And so I'm just coming up on my 11-year anniversary at Microsoft.
Congratulations.
I've been in developer division from the beginning and working in one way or another with .NET the whole time. Most of the time I was on the C++ team working on the compiler there.
On the compiler for building managed C++ applications, C++ CLI, I think is what you called it,
right.
You worked on?
Yeah. And so for the first about 5 years or so, I worked on designing the C++ CLI language with Herb Sutter.
Okay.
And then writing the specification, taking it through the ECMA standards process.
Fantastic. Well, today we're here to talk about .NET 4.5. Congratulations,
yep.
You guys just shipped the release candidate a week and a half ago.
Right.
So let's get down and dirty with the release candidate and talk about what developers can look forward to in 4.5. So I understand that the .NET 4.5 release, first of all, it has this Go Live license attached to it.
That's right.
So what's that mean?
So if you're a developer who's building a server application, particularly for a website, mm-hmm. it means that you can now host your website with .NET 4.5. And we'll make sure that, you know, if there's issues, we'll support them. We're shipping QFEs and hot fixes for .NET 4.5 right now on
okay.
the release candidate. And when we finally ship the final product, you know, RTM,
right.
it just means that you'll need to upgrade to that, you know, in order to continue getting support.
Sure, sure. And that's an in-place upgrade. You just run it and it upgrades everything.
It's a patch, yeah. basically, as
okay.
you expect, you know,
okay.
from moving to RC to RTM.
Got it. So let's talk about that upgrade experience moving from, say, .NET 4 over to 4.5, because this one's a little bit different than what we've done in the past, right?
Not quite. I mean, we've done it all.
Okay.
But, if you look at it, .NET 4.5 is an in-place update to .NET 4.
Okay.
And that means that, you know, it's an upgrade. It overwrites .NET 4. It's an in-place update, meaning that we've made it highly compatible. We think of it, you know, as from our engineering point of view, it's a service pack to .NET 4. It just has more features, and that's why we didn't really call it a service pack.
Got it.
But, you know, as far as compatibility, we care about compat a lot, and we're focusing on that to make sure that we achieve a service pack style.
Sure.
So that
means if I'm, you know, let's say I'm a Visual Studio 2010 developer and I'm still targeting .NET 4,
mm-hmm.
but my customers are going to start getting .NET 4.5, my app should still continue to work. And if it doesn't, we consider that a bug and we want to hear from you, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And in fact, I know, Brandon, that your team has an email address. If we could just pop that up on
yep.
the screen, that's netfx45compat@microsoft.com. So we would love to hear from you. I know the schedule's
right.
getting tight for us to be able to lock down that feedback.
Yeah.
But if you see anything weird on your machines as you go from .NET 4 to .NET 4.5 with your existing applications, then Brandon's team is happy to dig in there and make sure we can get that fixed.
And if you submit bugs through the Connect process on the website for
mm-hmm.
Visual Studio, we look at those as well. We've looked at every single one of them, everything that we think of as a compat issue, we've gone and investigated and fixed. If you just want immediate feedback from us, the email address you get is the one.
So you're feeling pretty good about the path to RTM at this point.
Yeah, we're close.
We
want it to be successful.
Fantastic. Well, we do as well.
Yep.
So let's also talk a little bit about, we're going to dive into all the features of .NET 4.5
yeah.
and all that good stuff first, but I want to go through a few more kind of, well, what happens with .NET 4.5 on certain operating system questions.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I noticed is that .NET 4.5, at least in the release candidate, it's not supported on XP or Vista, and we've said that that's the way it's going to ship. So you won't be able to run .NET 4.5 on XP, Vista, Windows Server 2003, some of those older operating systems, right?
Mostly. It does
okay.
work on Vista, so Windows Vista .NET 4.5 is supported there.
Oh, okay.
But you're right, it isn't supported on Windows XP or Windows Server 2003.
Got it. And so what does that mean for me as a developer if I have to support the people that are using those operating systems?
Yeah. Well, that's one thing that's really great about Visual Studio 2012 is we have the multi-targeting support for .NET. Mm-hmm. We've had that since Visual Studio 2008, and you know it's continued to get better in each release. .NET 4 is supported on Windows XP and Windows Server 2003.
Right.
And from Visual Studio 2012, you simply need to target .NET 4, and you get support for your application on XP.
Great. That's fantastic. I really like that story there. I mean, yeah. Obviously, you have to balance between you know moving forward with new features and then dropping support for really old operating systems. But I like that you can kind of straddle the fences there as you need to.
Yep.
Okay. That's great. So the other question I wanted to ask you is, let's say that you're still writing old like .NET 2 applications, which you know we still have people writing VB6 applications, so I'm sure there's a few of them out there.
Yeah.
If I have a machine that has .NET 4.5 on it, do I have everything I need to run my .NET 2 app, or do the customers need to go explicitly download? What's the story there?
So the story really depends on the operating system that you're working with.
Okay.
If you're using Windows 7, it already has .NET 3.5 included in it, and so anything that is a .NET 2 or .NET 3.5 app is running on the .NET 3.5 SP1 runtime.
Okay.
On Windows 8, the .NET 3.5 runtime and framework is included via feature on demand.
Okay.
So if you have installed it directly off of the Windows DVD installer, feature on demand will actually install .NET 3.5 as a Windows component at the point where you need it.
Great.
So it is supported. .NET 2 apps don't run on .NET 4 or 4.5 unless the developer is explicitly said to do that.
Okay.
Even though most apps actually will run on 4.5, mm-hmm. Just for compatibility, we wanted to be a little extra safe, and so we kind of said, if it's a .NET 2 app, run it on 3.5, unless the developer said so.
Yeah, and that's been the story for a while now.
It has since .NET 4.
Right.
And so you can actually change your config file to actually let it run on .NET 4.5 if the 3.5 or .NET 2 runtime isn't there.
Okay,
and
fantastic.
It's pretty easy to do.
Fantastic, that sounds great. So with kind of the operating stuff, you know, compatibility matrix headaches aside, let's dive into the fun stuff, which is, tell me, I know this is like asking you your favorite child, but tell me what is your favorite set of features in .NET 4.5?
I think the really awesome one that was highlighted last week is some of the performance improvements we did in the core runtime. Last week, the Windows Server blog created a case study of being moving over to Windows Server 2012.
Mm.
And one of the things that comes out of that is moving to .NET Framework 4.5.
Great.
And they highlighted two features, the background server GC and multi-core JIT.
Okay.
And both of those had tremendous improvements for the Bing like server farm. One of them, like background server GC, before they upgraded to Windows Server 2012, the applications were running about 7 to 8% of the time was in the garbage collector.
Okay.
And that's the one thing I hear all the time is that garbage collection is the top performance concern for many application developers. Bing changed that from 7 to 8% down to just 1% on average.
Wow.
And that's just from upgrading. Background server GC did all of that.
Huh.
And the other feature was multi-core JIT. Multi-core JIT, you know, as the feature suggests, is actually letting the JIT run on multiple cores, and so it improves startup time for your application. And that one's also on by default for ASP.NET applications.
Okay, for ASP.NET, but if I have other application types and I've tested it, I can presumably turn it on for those as well?
Yeah, it's only one or two lines of code, and it's very simple to do. Yep.
Okay, so let's talk more about the background garbage collection. I only know enough to be dangerous here. I know there's like the Gen 1, Gen 2, Gen 3 garbage collection, but I thought a lot of that stuff already happened in the background. So what do you actually mean when you say this?
So what happened before we had this background garbage collection is that every time the garbage collector needed to run, it would pause all of the threads in the application so that it could sweep through the memory and clean things up and then compact the memory. And obviously, as memory grows, you know, over the last 10 years, we've seen the amount of memory that applications use grow tremendously.
Sure.
I think 10 years ago, an application using 100 megabytes or more seemed excessive. Nowadays, that's kind of the starting
I think Notepad
line.
Uses like 250 now, so not really. But.
So if you think about it, I don't want to pause the application, and that just creates really bad experiences for many application types, particularly servers that have latency that they're concerned concerned about.
Or gaming scenarios, yeah. Where you don't want to pause in the middle, yeah.
And so what Background GC does is the Gen 2 part of the garbage collected heap, the largest part, can actually be going through and marking the heap while the application is still running. Hmm. As long as Gen 0 can continue to allocate memory, we don't need to keep the application paused while Gen 2 is being cleaned up.
Got it.
And so just that alone is able to take advantage of more hardware. We have more threads because there are more processors available to us, and you know, we actually get better performance out of that.
That is awesome. So I understand that the details of the Bing case study are available on the Windows Server blog.
That's right. So yeah. Just go to the Windows Server blog. It was posted last week, and cool. You can see like details of all the charts that showed before and after. It's pretty amazing.
That's great. Well, we'll have to get some more Channel 9 content out there talking about that as well, because I'm sure that we could spend hours. Charles Torre can go deep for 10 days on this stuff.
So we're already planning to do that. That's coming up very soon. And if you can go to the .NET blog or Channel 9 and keep an eye out for it, and we'll see that coming.
So. Fantastic. Well, once again, just a reminder, you can send us your questions here for Brandon Bray. We're on Twitter at CH9Live, so we would love to hear from you. And, of course, we're here at TechAd Orlando, so if you want to catch, you'll be over in the booth and everything as well. So so let's talk a little bit more about some of the other features that are in here that are in .NET 4.5.
Yep.
What's another one we should talk about?
Well, certainly one of the biggest ones we should all be proud of is what's coming with Windows 8. You know, we've seen the Windows runtime features coming up and, you know, the APIs that are available there. I think I'm very proud of what our team has done to really help build the best experience there. And a lot of support for Windows Runtime is available through the CLR. The metadata that Windows Runtime uses is very similar to .NET, and so the projections into .NET are created on the fly by the CLR, so you have kind of a great interop story that you don't even notice is happening.
What do you mean by that? What is a projection there?
So if you think about, I just like a collection of something, a list of something, or an enumerable of something, those are all .NET concepts that don't necessarily exist in other languages.
Sure.
So if you were in C++, you'd be using the STL library.
Okay.
And so projection is basically making the Windows APIs look like they were .NET APIs, and there's a lot that happens with the CLR to make that, you know, almost seamless.
Got it. But you guys are very explicit about making sure that you didn't just take every .NET framework library and make that available for Metro. You go through and...
In fact, all of the Windows APIs were created by the Windows teams themselves.
I see.
So it was actually not even, you know, the same idea as the .NET framework. You know, that is really the Windows API.
So it's a tailored experience for Metro, but you can still take advantage of a lot of the same constructs you're familiar with from, say, C# or Visual Basic.
That's right.
Okay, that's great. And then we also have just seen this renaissance of NuGet being used to update, you know, MVC and all those different libraries. That must be really core to your strategy now.
It's getting more and more the case. We've seen NuGet was, you know, around for a while. It's been out before .NET 4.5. But even in Visual Studio 2012, we've seen the teams that build NuGet integrate it more in Visual Studio. So it's almost a first-class experience. A lot of the projects that you can open in Visual Studio are, by default, have NuGet as, you know, NuGet packages as part of their default template.
Sure, sure. And, or Hanselman likes to say, you've got to NuGetify this, right?
Right.
It's like it's become a verb. Yeah.
And it's amazing. I think this really does kind of set the future for a lot of things that are coming up. It's great, you know, to be able to create any library and share it across any platform. And it really dovetails well with another thing that we did in .NET 4.5 called portable class libraries.
Right.
And so in Visual Studio 2012, you're able to build one library, one assembly that will work on phone, will work on within Metro apps, and work on .NET 4.5. And, you know, it works really well.
And I think I saw Xbox in the list as well, too,
Xbox
right?
Xbox is there, yep.
So really, I mean, if you think about it, .NET is everywhere. I mean, in terms of Microsoft platforms, and of course, we've got, you know, Mono out there as well. Does your team engage with the Mono guys?
Occasionally we do.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the best things about .NET for me is that it really is part of every Microsoft platform, and, like, you know, it's at the end of the day, I kind of feel like everything I do can really help every developer work on any platform.
Yeah, that's a great kind of arc to your career, because you started off 11 years ago working on the standardization front to make sure that we said, hey, look, we want to build this .NET thing, but we want to make it available to anybody that wants to go out to implement these similar types of constructs on other platforms, not knowing if they would actually show up and do that, but of course now we have seen that they've come. If you build it, they'll come, right? So that's really exciting. And then we also have this this like parallel story and like async, and that's huge, right? We saw a lot of that in 2010 with .NET 4, and there's async now.
So .NET 4 introduced the parallel framework, which had a lot of parallel collection types, and then the introduction of the task parallel library.
Right.
And that really is the foundation that async has now been built on up from.
Right. So async, it's kind of all the templates and the Metro style templates, you know, make use of async. It's really like, it kind of gets to the heart of this fast and fluid, like I should be able to touch this and it just updates and something else is doing something else, and as a user I don't even care.
So it solved one of the classic problems of user interface design, is that I should never do work on the UI thread.
Right.
But it's really hard to figure out how do I transfer work off of the UI thread, because it just clutters your code.
Yeah.
And async and await just make that incredibly simple.
So get rid of those modal dialogues. Yeah, that's awesome.
So
that's really cool.
We're seeing a new future.
Yeah. Now, your team also, well, maybe owns isn't the right word, because it's more of a community thing, but you guys also participate in the .NET micro framework.
Yep.
As well. So tell me about that.
So .NET Micro Framework is really focused on the lowest end of devices, things that are kind of where we look at what would you get if you could spend less than a dollar on a processor. Mm. And we're not quite there for everything, but you know, 32-bit processing has really come down in price, continues to go down in price. And you know, you're kind of looking at what kind of programming environment can I use if I don't have an operating system.
Right.
And .NET Micro Framework really is that, I think.
So these are my toaster ovens, my refrigerators, my
light
remote
switches,
control cars.
You want to do things like collect data and find out, is my application, or you know, in my house, when are the lights on?
Right.
Like, what's the temperature in different rooms, those
right.
sort of things. Just, if I can collect tons of data, what could I do with that?
Right.
And you know, these devices are really suited to that. And it really ties well with the cloud story, where you can actually send data up to the cloud and you know, you do something with it.
You're out of Diet Pepsi or
whatever,
right?
And you have the same programming model on both sides.
Right.
It's really awesome.
That's really cool. Have you done any micro framework programming yourself, or seen any cool projects you want to plug?
A few years ago. I haven't looked at anything recently, but I do know a few applications of framework and Silverlight, or just you know, being able to detect when you know the garbage cans are full, and you know, being able, you know, cities can actually do all sorts of things.
You're talking about physical garbage cans.
Yeah.
That brings a new meaning to the term garbage collection.
Yeah,
that's
certainly
awesome.
Does.
That's really cool. So what else? Anything else that we should cover? You're doing a talk on Thursday here at TechEd.
Yeah. So I'm covering what's new in .NET, you know, 4.5.
Yep.
And we're going through Entity Framework, Web API, and you know, then taking it on the other side and building the Metro style app that consumes those HTTP APIs.
Okay. So is Entity Framework, is that something your team looks after, or is that a partner team?
It's a partner team, and so it's, again, one of the things my team does is we collect all the parts of the framework and kind of make sure that it's tested well together.
Right.
And kind of give that end-to-end experience for .NET.
But you ship a version of Entity Framework with .NET 4.5, and then those guys are kind of at a very rapid pace of iteration.
Right. Entity Framework is probably one of the best examples of something that's shipping on NuGet.
Right.
And so it is the most popular NuGet package.
Oh, nice.
And so there's a few things that get better with .NET 4.5. Entity Framework has performance improvements you know, based on 4.5.
Sure.
But it's, again, I think one of those things about .NET, it's after a while, what you get from NuGet and what you get from a specific version of .NET really kind of blend together. And, you know, it's what you can get from the ecosystem that solves the problem. You know, .NET is based on this idea of productivity, and it continues to be a productive environment for developers.
Absolutely, absolutely. Anything new in this release with respect to the dynamic languages, you know, F#, that kind of stuff? Are you guys doing anything core there?
Nothing that I know of. Okay. I'm sure F-Sharp continues to do some things. I know that they have the type providers that make consuming things like OData, working with the Azure Marketplace, Data Marketplace, makes that better. And that's really suited to F-Sharp. It's not something I have spent a lot of time watching.
Okay, fair enough. Well, thanks for being with us, Brandon. We certainly appreciate diving in here, and people can look forward to your talk on Thursday afternoon, which will be posted on Channel 9, along with the rest of the talks here. So we'll let you get back to it. I know you have a lot of work to do to wrap up the RTM release, and I know that Brandon's team would love to hear about your bugs. So certainly send them a message at netfx45compat@microsoft.com if you hear anything there. We also can take your feedback at connect. That's connect.microsoft.com/Visual Studio. So I'm Brian Keller, and we'll be back later this afternoon with more great topics. Thank you,
Thanks.
Sir.
Thank you.